Good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Sunday, 18 April 2021. So we'll be continuing with our sharing from this book, Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. We are at page 35, the Q&A section, section 4.2. We have one more question which was sent to Brother Sian through WhatsApp. It's a very good question. So you listen to this question so that you understand. So the person who asked this question, I think it's a lady, she asked, "What still got so much craving after having listened to so much Dhamma?" So this is very typical of Dhamma cultivator and practitioner. They realize after so long cultivating, listening to the Dhamma, and thought that they have understood the Dhamma, but then in real life, when they go through life, they come to realize they still have a lot of cravings. They still got a lot of desire, attachment, clinging, grasping. When it comes to real life reality or example or situation, they realize Dhamma is Dhamma, whereas their mundane mind behave differently, still following the deluded way, the heedless way, which doesn't seem to have the Dhamma understanding. So if Dhamma is learned or developed or cultivated as a scholarly Dhamma or theoretical Dhamma, it will end up as knowledge. So knowledge actually cannot free the mind. Knowledge bind. Knowledge develop more attachment. When you attach to knowledge, you cannot liberate from duality, because duality comes from knowledge. Knowledge is thought-based, memory, accumulation. And the egoic mind that hold on to all this is the one that cling, grabs and attach. So this understanding, when it's lacking, the situation will arise. Just like what the person who asked that question said, why is it she still has so much craving after having listening or after having listened to so much Dhamma? Then the second question is, do we really comprehend what was spoken? So she starts to develop the understanding that there was no real understanding. Well, what is being heard is being absorbed as knowledge, because you memorize them, you remember them, then it becomes theoretical, it becomes like scholarly, maybe to pass exam, to answer that Dhamma question. But when it comes to cultivation, it's the reverse. Cultivation gives rise to real understanding, which is wisdom, not knowledge. And wisdom is an awakening. When you develop the ability to have that silent mind, which is the meditative mind, your true mind, and that one can see things as they are. That one can insight into phenomena and awaken to the three universal characteristics of nature, anicca, dukkha, anatta. That's why wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom is an awakening, it's an insight, understanding. When you penetrate truth, when you awaken to truth, that nature, that true mind just understand. And that understanding is connected to your true mind, your true nature. That's why it's always there, you don't have to remember them. Once awakened, the understanding is always there. Yeah. So wisdom is something that people cannot really understand. Wisdom is not rigid, wisdom is broad-based. Wisdom has this peculiarity The moment you awaken, you have that wisdom, you will always have it. You don't have to remember it. That's the reason why I used to share with you all. Wisdom is actually yoniso manasikara, wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So this manasikara is very important. Yoniso is wisdom. Manasikara is attention. At the moment of sense law contact, there is this manasikara, attention. So at the moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile or thought process, means contact with the six senses, this contact is what attention is all about. When you are attentive, when you are heedful, mindful, aware, then you can be attentive. Then at that moment when it is attentive or aware, whatever that arises, this wisdom, yoniso manasikara, will manifest spontaneously. And through that, you will not be deluded. Your mind will not stir, your mind will not react. Your mind can understand that reality for what it is. And it is at peace. That's how enlightened being able to be at peace with all situation, all condition, at all time. So this understanding is really vital. If you don't have such understanding, it's not easy. So my comment in bracket is, when the question I asked, do we really comprehend what was spoken? I said, this is not a question, but more of a doubt, because the person who asked the question doubt or not sure that they have really listened to the true Dhamma and developed the understanding. So most people don't have the ability. That's the reason why the question comes about. Then the third part is the best. She asks, guarding the sense door need tremendous effort. So it's as if this particular person who asked that question tries to cultivate, but she lacked understanding. So the question actually allow me to understand why she lacked understanding. Because she thought cultivating this Dhamma to apply in real life, they got to guard their sense door. Then they need tremendous effort. You know what is effort? Effort is something your mundane mind or your thought process create. So when it comes to effort, it's about the thought. For the thought, maybe you use effort. But when it comes to developing wisdom or meditation, there is no effort involved. The Buddha said, only need to silence your mind, maintain awareness, observe. Then everything will happen by itself. So there is a big difference between effort and meditation. The real meditation, you cannot apply effort. The moment there is effort, meditation ceases to be. That's why Jay Krishnamurti has this famous phrase, wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Effort implies a thought process. Somebody is doing something. And that doing is always by the thought. And the thought is egoic. When the thought is active, how can you be silent? How can you be aware? So it contradicts meditation. So that understanding is lacking in most cultivators. That's the reason why they thought they must use effort, like Sen Siu, mindfulness. Means he thought that mundane mind is the true mind. He said the mind is like a mirror bright on a stand. Then polish it until it shines so that no dust can align. So who created dust? What is dust? Thus are like defilements. And these are the duality that the mundane mind creates. When you create that word thus, like defilement or unwholesome, then the opposite manifests. Then what you do? You apply effort to abandon the negative. Then you want to hold on to the positive, the wholesome, the so-called non-defilement is the pure mind state, the wholesome mind state, or the virtuous mind state. So when you do this, you develop duality. How can you free your mind from duality? Duality is created by the mundane mind through knowledge, through words, through concept, through idea. And it is from the thought, sankhara. That's why thought divide, create duality, give rise to all this type of problematic mind state. To meditate is different. To meditate, you don't use thought. You silence your mind to observe. And that true mind that is without thought, when it observes, it can see the movement of thought. How thought divide, how thought create all this delusion. Then how through the views, opinion and conditioning, the thought become deluded. Then it attach, it cling, it grabs, it hold. Then it starts to react and stir, creating all the mundane emotion or mundane thinking. This has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. When you hold on to all this, you will have suffering. You will have affliction. So suffering and affliction comes from clinging to the duality, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. So when you react either way, there is stress. There is affliction. Because even to happy state or good experience, you develop craving and desire for it. Then, as we know, everything is condition arising, dependent originating. So all my state will change. From happy feeling, good feeling, it will become unhappy. So when that change happens, affliction is going to follow. Suffering is going to follow. So this become apparent to the meditator if he uses his true mind, which is awareness, to observe. Then when you observe without reaction, without views and opinion, then you start to develop understanding. Every time I give meaning, I cling, I grasp, whether positive or negative, I suffer. I end up suffering. And because this is a conditioned world, all phenomena behave this way. That's why you start to see the universal characteristics of impermanent. And because it's impermanent, it will lead to stress. It will lead to suffering, affliction. Yeah, you want things your way, which is not Nietzsche's way. And the egoic mind cling, grabs, give rise to the personality, the ego. And this one give rise to the evil root of possessiveness, greed, hatred, envy, jealousy, and negativity of emotion. Then whatever it cannot understand, cannot grasp, it gives rise to doubt. And it starts to worry about things. All the fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity, phobia, they come from delusion. So this is how mundane mind creates affliction and suffering. So we need to silence our mind to see. But there is another part where under the Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha taught the four right effort. Now this four right effort is thought-based. So they need effort. So there is no contradiction. But this is not meditation. This one is purification of the thought process. Purification of certain views. So you need to develop this right effort to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. When it comes to thought, you have to abandon it to right effort. So right effort is to spur you to act, to move. That's why we have the five ways as taught by the Buddha. But out of the five ways, the third and the fourth way is meditative. That one actually don't need effort. You just silence your mind, develop awareness, and let the emotion cease. Then you understand that that emotion can be anger, hatred, fear, insecurity, or whatever. They are dependent originating. They are not intrinsic. They arise because of wrong view of condition. Then when you don't do anything, when you're silent, the original mind, the true mind, returns. Means the mundane mind slow down and ceases because there is no more mental energy, wrong thought, to condition further wrong thinking, further wrong view. So when you silent everything, the thought slow down and ceases, then there is no duality, no views, no opinion, no concept, no idea, nothing. It's just stillness, silent, tranquility. Then you realize that is your trauma. Before it stirred, before it react, before it conditioned emotion, that was your original mind, trauma, the silent mind, original nature. That's why when you let everything return to your original true mind or true nature or the awareness nature, then you realize everything ceases. When everything ceases, there is peace, there is tranquility, there is stillness. That is what the meditative mind is. That's what freedom from suffering is. So that is the answer. Then you realize all this Sankhara mind state that you arise to your wrong thought, they are not intrinsic. They are dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, impermanent, lead to suffering, you attach, cling, and grasp, and give meaning, or you want things your way. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent and changing entity, for you to grasp on, cling on, and hold on to say, this is me. Therefore, all this can be mine. That's why it's anatta, non-self. And because it's anatta, it's empty. No reality, empty nature existence. All phenomena exhibit these three universal characteristics. Then you are not deluded. Then that understanding awakens you. That is not from knowledge. That one comes from observation. When you observe, you understand, you awaken. Then you realize all this while you have been deceived by the thought, by the duality created by thought, by your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, and your belief systems. And all the accumulation within your memory, which you don't understand. Because acting according to memory is not acting at all. There is no wisdom. Before the wisdom come in, before you become enlightened, the form and mind is egoic and deluded. So how can you act according to memory? Memory is born of the egoic mind's views, opinion, and conditioning. So it cannot awaken you. It will lead to more wrong view, more affliction, more suffering. That's the reason why the unenlightened being are entangled. They have this delusion, self-delusion, sakayadity, that condition them to arise all the wrong thought and condition their affliction and suffering. So all this, you need to silence your mind to observe, to understand. Whereas the four I effort, just now I give you one example, the first one is mainly thought-based. So that one, initial cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, you need to apply. But after you have applied them, after you have the embodiment of the four right efforts, purification of the thought process and the straightening of the view, then you go into meditation for developing the true penetrative wisdom, which is just beyond the normal four right effort. Because the first right effort is to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. As you develop the initial wisdom, you have the ability to arise a second right effort to prevent them from arising. That one become very natural. Yeah, the wisdom starts to appear already. So that second right effort is actually a theoretical right effort, because you don't really need effort. Once the Yoniso Manasakara initial wisdom is there, that defilement has no power over you. That's why it will not arise. So the second right effort is actually not really an effort. And the third right effort is an effort, because you have to cultivate the right thought, the wholesome thought that are still not in you, the right speech, right action, and the right thought. So all this you have to cultivate. You have to put in the right effort to understand what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, and cultivate them one by one, leading to right mindfulness. Oh, sorry, right livelihood. Means you live your life in accordance with the Dhamma, following the Dhamma way. So the Noble Eightfold Path factor, from right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, then can become like perfected or fulfilled, because when you apply the four right effort, it will continuously purify your right thought, right speech, right action. Then you will have the ability to prevent them from arising. Then after that, you will have sense restraint. But when you did the third right thought, the fourth right thought, to cultivate the wholesome mind state that's still not with you, and to perfect them, and to refine upon them and perfect them with the last fourth right effort, then you become beautiful. Then the Noble Eightfold Path starts to unfold. You have the embodiment of the first six path factor. Then from there on, you need to develop the further penetrative direct seeing wisdom via meditation, awareness, via sati, no more effort. So that's how you should develop the understanding. Okay, now we go back to the question. Then I will run through with you the answer. Okay. I asked that question, do you agree with her third question? Guarding sense door need tremendous effort. If you agree, it means you do not understand the Buddha Dhamma. As simple as that. Effort alone cannot free the mind. It's not penetrative, not the meditative type. The four efforts are mainly applied at the thought level to deal with thought. First right effort is to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. Then second right effort is to prevent the arising of any wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. So all these are thought based. So the third right effort is to cultivate the right and wholesome action, speech, and thought that are still not in you. Again, this is still thought based. Then the fourth right effort is to refine upon and perfect the wholesome action, speech, and thought process that are already in you. Effort is only used when it is related to thought. What frees you is only wisdom. Please do remember that. That is the reason why guarding sense door, if you use effort, you are suppressing it, and you are trying to control your emotion from stirring your delusion. So effort means when you are angry, then you think you know the Dhamma. You say anger is an evil root. You are a cultivator, you should not have anger. So what you do? You apply, you think you know the Dhamma, the teaching. You apply right effort not to be angry. So how you do it? They use the word yan. Yan means what? They thought it's patient. Suppress, actually. That is suppression. That is not patient. So when you suppress your anger, believing that anger is you, then that is the wrong way to cultivate. That is delusion. You have to realize through the silent mind, the third way and the fourth way, through silencing your mind, that anger was never you. And when you know anger and the emotion was never you, then why must you do anything to it? Why you want to abandon it? In the first place, it was never you. So if it's never you, then why not you let it cease to understand it? That's why maintain awareness and let things be. Then all this emotion you realize will slow down until the mind returns to its original state, which is your true mind. Then you realize the emotion is gone, the fear is gone, the anger is gone. Then that realization awakening, that one is the nature realized. Because by silencing the mind, be with it, just aware, do not give it any more mental delusion to the wrong thought, then the emotion ceases to be, the sankhara ceases to be. When sankhara ceases to be, you return to your original state before the stirring, because before sankhara arrives. So that is the meditative state. That is your true mind. That is your true nature. That is the awakening that you need to realize. So this is most important. This is meditation. Not all the doing. Not all the active creation of sankhara. Means suppressing it, controlling it. I don't want to get angry. Yan. So this suppression will bottle up. That's why it can never be rooted out. Even your fear, you conceal your fear. You try to act like you are not having problem. You are not having fear. All these are delusion. Heedless people do a lot of such things. The enlightened one, they don't do this anymore. They understand clearly the universal characteristics of mind, especially sankhara. Sabbe sankhara anicham, sabbe sankhara dukkham, sabbe dhamma anatta. So this become clear to them. That's how the meditation is to be developed. So I explain here, that is the reason why guarding sense door, if you use effort, you are suppressing it and you are controlling it. Means you are trying to control your emotion, suppressing your anger, your unhappiness, your whatever fear, worry, anxiety, and phobia, your unhappy mind state. So when you control your emotion and prevent it from stirring via delusion, there is suppression. That's the reason why the Buddha used the word be vigilant. Do you know what vigilant is? It means be heedful, be mindful, be attentive. So always be attentive and ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path or meditation as taught by the Buddha, so that delusion does not arise to delude you into negativity of mind states, so that the evil roots will not arise to condition your evil actions, speech, and thought process. Vigilant means attentive, ever mindful, and ever heedful, so that wisdom can protect you. Hence, vigilance is not an effort. When you do not have wisdom, you cannot deal with defilement. All your effort will be of no meaning. You can try to cut here at feeling, cut there, and say, let go, don't attach. All this has got no meaning because it doesn't work. And cultivation is not like that, for they never inquire who is letting go, who is doing all this. So the person with delusion is trying to let go. You must ask yourself, can this be done? If you do not understand, you cannot let go. That is the fact. You believe this is real. You believe this is your problem and you want to resolve it. That's why you hold on to it. Not knowing that by not holding on to it, you can actually resolve it very well. So this is real delusion. If you do not understand, you cannot let go. You will grasp and cling via delusion. But once wisdom or wise attention, yonisomanasikara is there, like I explained earlier on. You are no longer deluded. Hence, you are not whole or grasped. Right? So, if you don't hold and you don't grasp, is there a need to let go? Only those who hold need to let go. But without wisdom, it cannot be done. So this explanation is very important. Do not be deluded anymore. Wake up. Just like what I told Eddie just now, the kid, if you have nothing for him to do or play, the kid will go around and create havoc. But if you have a toy for him, he will stay quiet and not disturb you. So what happened is, this kid is like your mind. You must let it do something. Otherwise, it will be like that child or that kid. It will go around and create havoc through heedlessness. That is constantly lost in thought and seldom mindful or heedful. You are seldom aware within the moment to experience life or to live life. So your consciousness of or mind is trapped inside your physical body. Oh, sorry. Since your consciousness or mind, mundane mind, is trapped inside your physical body, and the senses are all there within your physical body, so upon contact, it is like automatic. Means habitual tendency. Just like the physics experiment of the battery, the bulb and the switch, it will automatically light up and become conscious. Or become conscious. So that is how your senses function. So when the light bulb lights up, it's like make you conscious. That's why it's all automatic, following nature's law. Each and every phenomenon may be mental, physical, and nature's phenomena. It is all dependent originating and condition arising. Anything perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. We can perceive our physical, mental, and nature's phenomena via our mental perception. Upon contact of mind with our senses, we become conscious. Then we start to perceive, think, and react, thereby stirring the mundane mind to cause mental hindrance, like sensual desire, ill will, which are the duality of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience to arise. And because of this mental hindrance, you become heedless. It hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why it's called mental hindrance. And because of this mental hindrance, you develop heedlessness, leading to all the suffering and the misery. Then if you tell the kid, I'm going to control you and don't let you play, do you think the kid will listen to you? You may also say, train him when he is young, or try to tell him, sit down, do meditation, and be mindful. The kid will give you hell, right? Because they are too small or too young to understand, unless they have their path, they are gifted. Otherwise, they will not do that, because kids are still kids. Without wisdom, without understanding, all kids behave the same, heedless. So what you need to understand is to make them understand why they must do all this that you advise them. And because it is their life, we must let them decide. And as parents, we can only advise them. You can only support them, advise them, provide for them, do your duty. But you cannot decide for them, because it is their life. You can advise, no problem. So this is to avoid coming, to avoid selfishness, desire, authority to actually control your child or make them restrict their movement, their activity. And you are not careful when you do this to them, this is coming. In future, you will have parents that will restrict you control you, prevent you from doing the thing that you want to do. So it's your life, you decide. Whatever you do, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. That's why the law of karma is very fair. You reap what you sow. Whatever you do to your child, to others, you will become the victim in future. So if you don't want that to happen, have a liberal mind. Have an open mind. Develop love, compassion, and consideration. Their life, let them live, let them decide. Your duty is to provide them with whatever advice based on your experience, based on your understanding, not to make life more complicated and create more misunderstanding, mistrust, conflict, leading to anger, hatred, and suppression or separation. So all this you have to be very careful, very tactful. So for your advice, or for your own good, for your future, this is what I can share with you. I will only advise you. But your life, you still decide. So you can tell your children all this. If I were you, I will not do that. But because this is your life, you have to reflect, contemplate, and understand. Then you make a choice. Is that what you want? You want to end up that way? That is your life, your choice. You decide that you are born of your own karma, heir to your own karma, conditioned and supported by your own karmic nature. And you are what you are because of your karma. So when you understand this, make sure you make the right choice. Make sure you understand what you do. Yeah. And I continue. You find out for yourself whether this is going to help you or not. So if you do that, you do not create karmic negativity or trouble for him. And that is very good understanding that in future you will have parents who will treat you the same, will not force you to do things that you don't like, will give you the understanding, the advice, and help you to make decisions for your better life in the future. So this is very important. So I go on. Since he is born of his karma, heir to his karma condition, supported by his karma, and he is what he is because of his karma, so why do you want to interfere? That is a good understanding. You only play your role as a parent who has a duty towards their upbringing, towards advising them, guiding them. That is all. Do not force them to do things that they do not like. Do not pressure them to do anything. For meditation, it is the same. Guarding the sense door does not need effort. They confuse effort with what is going on in daily life. Like when you keep your precept, what is the fourth precept? Abstain from telling lies and false speech. They say this is difficult. So you will ask me how to keep that precept, especially for salesmen. They keep on complaining to me, it's not how to keep. If you do not see the importance, you will try to justify. Then it is like exceedingly difficult to keep that precept. Why? Because the desire and craving to lie to get the sales is very tempting. And this desire and craving to lie is via their own delusion and selfishness. But they cannot see, because the ulterior motive is to get the sales. So they are willing to compromise. They are willing to tell lies. And that is the reason why they lie. Otherwise, why do they lie? You lie because you want to conceal the fact so that you will not get into trouble. Especially those who have cheated on their spouse. They lie because they do not want to be caught. Even the small kid knows how to lie. Did you do it? No. They will answer, no, daddy, no. Actually, he did it. But because he is scared of the cane, so he lied. But certain kids, They are by nature honest and sincere, and they will not lie. So you must understand your kid. So meditation is the same. When it comes to cultivation, it is always about wisdom. And if you do not have wisdom, your mind cannot be free. Now coming back to the first part of the question regarding craving. Why still got so much craving after having listened to so much Dhamma? So the answer is, I ask back a question. So what is your answer? What is the meaning of craving? Craving, according to the Buddha, there are three types of craving. First, essential craving, kama tanha. Oh, sorry. Kama is 1M, not 2M. Yeah, spelling mistake. No, no, 1M only. Cancel one. K-A-M-A. And there is craving to be, bhava tanha, followed by craving not to be, vibhava tanha. You must understand the difference between craving and wisdom. Craving is always associated with evil roots, like attachment and desire, whereas wisdom is free of evil root. When you have wisdom, you can love without attachment. You can have also the good food, but without craving and attachment. And that is wisdom. Means you can have. It's not a craving. It's not a desire. Yes, condition is such. When there is condition for it, why not? That's why sometimes I say, temper yourself a bit. Live life. If there is condition for good food or good moments, why not? Experience them. I won't use the word too strongly, like enjoy them. Because if you enjoy without delusion, without wisdom, it will lead to craving, attachment, and delusion. So all this is a matter of understanding. When you understand, you use the word appropriately. I won't say enjoy, I say live life to the fullest. You can experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. And this is very beautiful understanding. That's how you can truly live life to the fullest. And life can be really wonderful, beautiful, meaningful. That joy is so different. That joy, born of wisdom and understanding, is not an enjoyment. You don't go and enjoy it like worldly desire or craving. No. When you eat good food, you really taste it. Then you don't develop attachment. When you taste it, you understand the difference. You know when there is condition for this, this thing is beautiful. Even there is no condition, you go through situation which could be like food are not available. You still have to make do with whatever is available. But if you have the wisdom, the Dhamma, even very simple food can be very tasty. You can have the understanding not to like react to it. Or to be like averse to it, means you through your own comparison, you compare to the good old time. Last time when I was back home, when I was wealthy, when I was having this wealth and money, I can have all the good food and all. Now because condition is very bad, why must I go through all this? So that thought will make you think deludedly. Means you cannot accept the reality. The reality is things have changed, finished. Or you travel, then you are caught in a situation, even with all the money you have, you are not able to change the condition there, because there is nobody there to help you. Or you all are trapped there. Like if there is a shipwreck or whatever, then maybe you survive on an island, or you are being drifted somewhere. Then the condition is so harsh, so difficult. What can you do? When you have Dhamma, you have wisdom, you will make do, and you will know how to be contented with things. You will not react, you will not create misery, suffering, unhappiness. You will know causes and conditions and that things will be like that. So this is understanding, and this is how you free our mind. So now we will read on so that you can understand. So when you have wisdom, you can love without attachment, and you can also have good food, but without craving and attachment. That is important. Otherwise, you become gullible and believe what other people say. Like the statement, if you are spiritual, then you cannot have good food. Why? Because they say that is craving. What do you think of their statement? Do you agree? If that is your answer, then I do not think you understand the true Buddha Dhamma. Because during the Buddha's time, he was also invited to the palace and the rich man's home, where he was also served and offered very good food, special food. And he rejoiced and still eat them. The important point is the Buddha also ate those food, but he does not develop attachment to what he ate. If there is condition to eat, he eat. Otherwise, he is also able to accept the reality. He is also alright about things. Even lousy food, when he goes for his pindapata, if the food is allowable, he still eat them. Because he has no craving or desire. And if he has craving or desire, he will have this thought that say, I don't want to go there to do the pindapata because the food there is not so good. So that is the mundane mind's stirring, wrong thought. But because the Buddha doesn't have that, that's why there is no attachment and craving or desire and selfishness. She will not arise, he will not arise those thoughts. When there is no craving or attachment, then there is, when there is no desire and attachment, then there is no craving. When you do not understand the meaning of craving as per the Dhamma taught by the Buddha, you become gullible. So this is to prevent you from becoming gullible. Craving is not the way lay people define them. Most people label craving as going for lifestyle, going for nice car, good food, quality life and honesty. They thought this is craving, this is desire. But the Dhamma doesn't teach that way. True enough, the Dhamma do teach contentment. But the main point is, you must have contentment through understanding. You are contented with life, with what you have. But if your life happen to have the good parami and you are given abundance, then the contentment that normal people talk about is very different. Because normal people say you have to be contented with what you have. So they don't want to strive on to become wealthy and to become like rich. No, that one is also a wrong understanding of contentment. Contentment means whatever situation I am in, I am contented. But if you have a profession or a, what they call ambition to become an engineer or a doctor or a professional or a successful person so that you can help humanity, that is your ambition. Nothing wrong. That is not craving. That is not desire. No. And you cannot just apply the knowledge Dhamma wrongly. Negatively. Oh no, you must be contented with life. Be simple, simple life. The word may be true. Enlightened people do use this word, simple life. I also use this word. But that is not what you think. You cannot quote me as saying, Brother Teo says simple life, then don't have ambition. Don't try to become the wealthy people. No. That is not the Dhamma. The Dhamma is, if you have the condition to be successful like Bill Gates, he can donate a lot of his money and develop a lot of wholesomeness. But they come in that way. They believe in that type of life, that type of cultivation. So everyone is different. Everyone has their role. Whereas for us, most of us, we have the Dhamma. But I realize a lot of cultivators, they don't want to have materialistic gain and all those things. That's why they say they prefer to renounce, become monk and all those things. So through that, when they become monk, they renounce, they cannot own things. But you have to check. You have to find out for yourself. Because that is, provided you have the understanding, there are times you become monk. Yes. Test yourself to go through all those things. So that when you cannot have all those things and you can survive, then your mind become different and you can actually cultivate better. Because their fear is, if they don't renounce, they start to have craving and greed for materialistic gain and success. Then when they gain them, they will not think of Dhamma, they will not cultivate. That is where the fear is. That's why people choose to go that way, renunciation, very easy. But when you have the understanding, it's different. That's why you look at all the great beings, the bodhisattvas and all those things when they come, especially certain great beings like Wenshu and all those things, they sometimes come as beggars, lay people, simple. Even Vimalakiti, that great bodhisattva who had met hundreds of millions of Sammasambuddha, he liked to come in lay form. So it depends on your understanding and your cultivation. If you can have that understanding, then you come in whatever form, you do not fear. Even when you are successful, you have the wealth and all those things, but you know how to use them, you know how to apply them for the good of the many. And you know how to actually make use of all this so that you don't have to depend on others for subsistence or for support and all those things. That's why Tsuji starts to do their own. Where you make offering to Tsuji, they make a rule. They will not use your money for their own subsistence and support. For that, they will have their own Dhamma activity, the recycling, selling of books and other things. Then they use that money for their own needs. Whereas the others, like to fund their relief project or their buildings, like to build such centers and other things, then to do all their volunteer work and other things, they need to have their own funding. Even the transport to go there, sometimes you have to take flight to disaster area. The volunteer, the disciple, they need to find their own money. You cannot use the donor's money. Otherwise, it can lead to abuse. And all these are very important understanding for cultivators. So this part, you have to bear in mind, the difference between craving and ambition, and also what we call contentment. Do not get them wrong. The main key understanding is where you don't have delusion, the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, then you will know how to differentiate between craving and your pure wish or your ambition or your whatever wisdom understanding. So I read on that. The common misconception is people generally believe that, oh, this one I have covered. Okay. The craving one. Okay, I read on. That is how the whole Dhamma can be misunderstood. They like to have good food, but outwardly, when they try to live their life with such misconception, means the wrong view, they will have to suppress their desire and craving for good food. Hence, the expression, guarding the sandstone need tremendous effort. Actually, that is suppression. Then some, even worse, outwardly, when in front of public, they dare not eat. They try to behave as if they are enlightened, they don't have craving. But when there is nobody around, it's a different story. So if you do that, that shows you lack understanding. You lack Dhamma understanding. And inwardly, if you look into it, it's self-hypocrisy. Because you have this wrong thought, misconception. So those who don't understand, they think guarding sense don't need tremendous effort. The craving is so strong inside, and you do not have mindfulness and wisdom, you cannot see them. And you will have an idea of enlightenment as being spiritual, I cannot have craving, which means I must not have good food. I must not stay in a nice place or comfortable place and have to renounce everything. The Buddha never say that, because the Buddha say, for lay people, you only need to keep the five precepts, and you can own things and you can have things, but do not attach to them. According to Lord Buddha, a lay person can have and experience the four types of happiness, the sukhang. The first one is happiness of possession. When you have acquired wealth through righteous means or right livelihood, then there is a sense of well-being and happiness. That joy and happiness is thus happiness of possession, the first type of joy or happiness that a lay person can have. Then you want to have further sukhang, you can develop the understanding that you know how to make use of whatever wealth or possession that you have for the happiness of yourself and others. Can be your loved one, your relative, your friends, or to humanity. Then it will constitute the second type of happiness. You use it for wholesomeness, to help people, to give them better life, better condition, to relieve suffering. So this is the second type of joy. Then the third type of happiness or joy is to be free from debts. Those who borrow from loan shark will look forward to having this type of happiness. Then the last type of happiness is to live a blameless life so that the wise one will not blame you. When you already have the means and can afford, you should be more generous to help others and do not be so petty or stingy or calculative anymore. Instead, you should have goodness, kindness, and generosity to help others in need. These are the Dhamma that can help you understand and develop the right understanding to practice the right teaching leading to the four types of realizable happiness for lay people. When you listen to Dhamma, the most important focus is to develop right view, which is most important, so that you can straighten your earlier wrong view, so that you are no longer deluded. Then you will know how to go about developing the cultivation with the right understanding. When your view is right, ignorance or avijja will be reduced. Then the first two links of paticca samuppada, or the 12 link, which is avijja or ignorant condition, paticca sankara, condition, mental activity, will be weakened, leading to less sankara or mental activity. And this will in turn lead to more clarity of mind, thereby making you less heedless and more mindful and heedful. If you have straightened your views, then avijja, which is ignorant, will be further weakened. And dependent on this weakened avijja, sankara, which is your mental activity, your thinking, your emotion, your reaction and stirring of mind, and your heedlessness, will also be weakened or attenuated. So sankara, which is your mental activity or thinking, mental volition, mental states, mental formation, and mental reaction, etc., will slow down. Then as you continue to straighten your view until your wrong view no more, then avijja paccaya sankara will cease to be. That is how you do not think anymore. This is also the reason why the enlightened one is always heedful. they do not think, and they do not need to think anymore. They only use thought to arise thinking when they need to. That is why I always tell you all, you don't have to think. But most of you find it so difficult. That's why I say for most of you, it's like very difficult because of the mental hindrance, born of avijja, mainly self-delusion. They are still very strong. They are still there. So sankhara will keep on arising following the first two link of avijja, paccaya sankhara. That's the reason why the Buddha said sabbe sankhara anicchang, all of sankhara, means everything that your mind can do, like your thinking, volition, etc. They are impermanent. They come and they go. Then why do you cling on to them, hold on to them, and give them meaning? And sabbe sankhara dukkang, or whatever sankhara you attach, cling, will bring about suffering. You give meaning, it will bring about suffering when you attach to it and held on to them deludedly. So when you do that, suffering will be the result. This is the reason why the Buddha taught the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and non-self or empty nature. He always used the word sankhara, as sankhara is inclusive of your feeling and perception aggregate, and it is termed the content of consciousness. That is, it includes all mental activities within that consciousness. When you understand that, you must listen with understanding to develop the right view, to straighten your wrong view. When you have more right views, you will become less deluded. Then you will know how to live life, and craving will gradually be reduced until finally, when there is no more delusion or craving, craving will be rooted out. And with no more craving, you will become awakened or enlightened. Craving is a desire that comes from ignorance, which is mainly your grasping, clinging, and holding, because you think you exist. The me and the I, the personality, the ego, the self, or the other, created by the mundane mind, the egoic mind. And because of that, selfishness arises, personality arises. Okay, I read again, maybe the sentence phrasing, I have to read it again, I have to follow the text. The me and the I, the personality, the ego, the self, and the atta created the selfishness. Then it also created the personality that tries to own things and have things. That's how greed, selfishness, desire, craving, and lust, etc. arise. All come from the ego. Sakayaditi. Without the ego, the I and the me, there is nobody to be greedy, selfish, etc. Things are just the way they are, not what you think. That is why only wisdom free, because it can root out all this delusion. Without wisdom, it is exceedingly difficult to cultivate. So always remember, guarding the sense door need wisdom and not effort. So this is the main difference. Guarding sense door need wisdom, not effort. Then when listening to Dhamma, you must also reflect, contemplate, and later cultivate to develop all the three turning wisdom of Suttamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya. Okay, we stop here. Page 44. We have to go for meditation. Now it's already 4:13. So we will stop the sharing. We will have 45 minutes of meditation, awareness-based meditation. We will off the light. Then you all can begin your meditation. So as usual, your main intent is to train your mind to have stability of awareness. Just relax, maintain awareness, silence your mind. Then let the mind settle down and develop the ability to be at peace with all things. Then when the mundane mind settle down, when the thinking mind settled down, when Sankara slowed down, it will give rise to understanding. You will come to realize your true mind, your silent mind, your meditative mind, which is just tranquility, stillness, and awareness before the stirring, before things become deluded. The lady asks, do we really comprehend? You comprehend means you have no more craving. But most people don't quite comprehend the Dhamma because they don't reflect and they don't contemplate, investigate, and inquire with mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. And these are the reasons why they cannot see and cannot understand. The moment you understand that you only need to develop the five spiritual faculties, especially your mindfulness, which you need to stabilize to become mindful or heedful. You have to stabilize your mindfulness to develop the stability that is needed for it to become heedful. Then all the teachings will become truly clear and very easy to understand. Then there will be no more question. So this is how you really develop the understanding. Because the question asks whether after listening to all this Dhamma sharing, do you really understand? So to really understand, you have to develop the five spiritual faculty, the training of the mind, so that the mental hindrances are no more there. Then after that, you have to reflect, contemplate, investigate, and inquire with mindfulness, leading to heedfulness. So if you don't do all those things, you just listen and accumulate knowledge, it does not benefit the individual. Because if you study the Dhamma as something very theoretical, then it ends up as Dhamma knowledge. Or if you do like some of these people, even monks, they just study it and they become very scholarly. They know the scripture very well, they know the sutra very well, so they commit to memory. Then they can rattle it. But it doesn't mean you have the Dhamma if you just do that. Because Dhamma knowledge is not real Dhamma. You must put the teaching into practice or cultivate it for you to awaken, to arise the wisdom. So the three stages of Dhamma are very important. First is Pariyatti. Always remember the Buddha recommend the three phases of Dhamma. Pariyatti is the study of the teaching. We call it the learning path, where you study the Dhamma. So when you have developed the understanding of this teaching, then this one is useful. Then you can move on to phase two, Patipatti. Patipatti is to put this teaching into cultivation, into practice. So this is the important part. Without doing this, you cannot develop the five spiritual faculty. You will never reflect, contemplate, inquire, and develop stability of mindfulness to go into the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation via heedfulness. So all these are important. Then you need to actually refer as guidance from the Avijja Sutta, the 10 steps that are involved in the cultivation. So unless you do all those things, you will never be able to develop the real wisdom or awakening. Okay, we go back to the notes. Oh, there is one more question from Sister Ingby. Okay, I read you the question. Last time, I used to have this wrong understanding that samadhi can only be developed during a formal sitting meditation posture. But last Sunday, during the Heart Sutta class, based on your explanation, I suddenly realized that samadhi can also be developed during training of daily mindfulness. Is that right? So I answer, I say yes. It can be developed in the midst of life. Means while you are developing daily mindfulness, you can stabilize it until it develops samadhi. To do that, the mind must enter sati. Mindfulness must be very stable, and you must be aware most of the time, if not all the time, leading to heedfulness. So I will read you the answer. We will do some sharing before we go for the second session. Okay, Sister Ingby has asked a very incredibly good question, because she had developed some form of mindfulness cultivation already. Earlier on, she thought samadhi can only be developed during formal meditation, when your mind is much calmer and stable. This can happen because your senses are mostly dull and less active during formal meditation. Also, during formal meditation, the condition and setting around are usually more conducive. But when you come out to live life, you are in an active mode. Do you understand? Your seeing consciousness, your hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness, they are all actively functioning. You have to act, you have to move, and you have to be aware of so many things, including your thoughts. And your thoughts keep on arising. And sometimes the mental hindrances are there to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state, to make you heedless. So in the active state of daily life, samadhi is exceedingly difficult to have. That's why most people find it so difficult to develop samadhi. So I will read again. That is the reason why it... So in the active state of daily life, samadhi is exceedingly difficult to have. There is a reason why it needs to be trained. Samadhi in daily life can only come about when your daily mindfulness is very stable. This is what I explained also. So after you have stabilized your daily mindfulness, technically, you must have this ability to be mindful throughout the day, most of the time, if not all the time. Then your mind must enter sati. You must do your daily mindfulness, daily religious routine, including walking, bowing, everything you do while you are awake or conscious, determined to be aware. Then when you are developing the formal meditation, you have to silence your mind, develop the stability of this awareness until your mind enters sati. That's why whatever object of meditation you may use, it will end up, your mind become very subtle, very quiet, very peaceful, until like your object of meditation become very subtle. Like anapanasati, also no more movement. The in and out breath has become like almost stop, subtle, until no more movement, or your rising, falling, or whatever. Because when your mind starts to settle down and become very tranquil, very still, very quiet, means it's going back to your original state to realize your true mind. When that stabilizes, your mind enters sati. That's how it's to be done. But people don't understand. When the object of meditation become very quiet, very still, they actually panic. especially those who do anapanasati, that they thought they got no more breathing. So that fear triggered off, they thought they may die. Or when they reach the point where the object of meditation becomes very subtle, like the rising and falling, what has been normally thought is go and change the object of meditation to sitting and touching. Develop mindfulness of sitting and touching. So if you do that, you are trying to create more thought process again. You fail to understand what is happening. When it has become so subtle, means your mind is going to realize the true mind. Your mind is going to enter sati. So you have to let it enter. So you continue to relax and maintain awareness until the mind itself become very still and very quiet. And then the mind will enter sati. When the mind enters sati, whatever movement, it will be like magnified. And everything become very sensitive, like very clear. That every movement is like your awareness is connected. All the vibration, all the movement, all the tactile sensation, it's like your awareness is continuously. Yeah. Then later on, if you keep it at a certain place, it will stay there and become very quiet, very still, until the mind got total no sankhara activity at all, no movement, nothing. Then that mundane mind that sees will give rise to the condition for the true mind, which is just tranquility, stillness, and just awareness to arise. That's how you realize your true mind. And within that state, there is deep peace, tranquility, stillness, no movement at all. But that state is very near the thinking. Because the thinking can start very fast, especially if you have not stabilized that awareness. When you have stabilized, then of course it takes a while. Even to think also is not so easy. Yeah. And most of the time you are just aware. But that stage, you will need to have some form of initial wisdom to help you. Otherwise you will think a lot. The doubt will arise, the curiosity will arise, and you will think. So this is how daily mindfulness is to be developed. What's the time? Oh, 5:18. Okay, I think we stop here. Huh? Yeah, because this answer is quite long. We stop here. Huh? So we stop at this page. Huh? Should be page 45, I think. Huh? Oh, page 46. Okay, page 46. Okay, then we open up for Q&A and meditation reporting.
Amitofo. Yes, Amitofo to Brother Mrs. Yeah. Kyo and all Kayamitas. Brother, I want to talk about my meditation.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, I want to talk about my meditation. Now, my meditation, how should I say it? It has been very, very normal in the sense that I get into stillness, you know, very quickly and things like that. But
that is very.
Go ahead. What I was saying is, my meditation has been very still, very quickly, and then get into the samadhi, you know.
But
because of my daily life has a lot of activities, then suddenly, in one meditation, it become crazy, you know. Okay, then after that, it come back to normal again after my contemplation, Then. After that, it come back again to test me again, no?
Correct, yes.
Become crazy again, no? And then after that, crazy, you know, for a few sessions of that, then I realized, oh, something happened then, you know what? And then I do all the needed contemplation, wasabi, sankara, nicha, that kind of thing. After that, the recent one, the last week, they're all gone, you know. all gone.
Yeah.
And then become still and back to my normal meditation again.
Adu to you. That is very good. Because so that is
a lot of testing.
Yes. It will change, it will transform. Then it will come and give rise to such like transformation that can give rise to situation like to make you confused or create doubt in the meditator.
Yes.
So you use your thought to reason and try to like analyze what went wrong or those things, then you will be caught. Because
yes,
then karma will start again. Then you will say, why like that? Why like that? Then that's the reason why I share with Song Deo last time. It will come as a test. In fact, many cultivators had this before, even Ajahn Mah Bow Wang, Long Tam Mah Bow Wang. Last time in his book also he wrote, the test will come after you have progressed. This is what they call the defilement of insight. Then his meditation become like what you went through. His Buddha was very powerful. He was able to settle down into stillness, into silence, into that calm state very fast. Then mindfulness throughout the day, he was mindful. Then for no reason, one day, suddenly the mind becomes so wow, he cannot do anything to it. All the technique, all the Buddha, everything, like what happened to you, no use. So what happened was he finally started to find out why. Then he was, according to him, he was lucky he met Ajahn Mah. Ajahn Mah was his teacher. Ajahn Mah was the one that guided him. He said it's not all this calmness, all this, but he didn't say it will come and test him. So he teach him to relax, silent, and come out of that. And don't expect to be in that state all the time. Because this is the conditioned world, the mundane mind. So when the expectation is not there, he starts to settle down again. Then he starts to develop the training all over again. But this time, he go into daily mindfulness. That's how he got it back. Then he realized, previously, that state that he has to maintain all the time in that stillness and all things is not the awakening. That is just that mind in that tranquil state, or we call it samadhi. Sometimes it's a mixture of absorption and concentration. And if they do jhana, it becomes one-pointedness. That's why they have to release it and come out into daily mindfulness. In the midst of life, you must develop that upachara samadhi. That is the real one. That one can live life. That one is active. That one is not in the form of meditation. And that one can insight the phenomena, can awaken. That's how he understand it. So for you, it's very good. When it comes, you finally know that it's like a test. It become crazy. Yeah. So it's good that you share this so that people can also have the understanding. So don't panic. Thing is just the way it is. Like the Buddha said, condition like that, things are like that. So what is the condition? It's a test. That's why it become like that. Then for no reason, we are just now in the way you answer, it's like you also try to use the analysis and bring in the word. You say you nowadays you're also quite busy with your daily life. Sometimes that one could contribute, but it's more like a justification. Maybe I'm too busy and I didn't put in enough effort or training and all those things. It could be one of the reasons, but that is what the analysis will result in. Forget about all those things. Whatever happened, accept the reality of it. It's part of the way. Even it's a test or whatever, it will come. As long as I don't have any expectation that my mind has to be like that, then your problem is gone. Understand? Your doubt is gone. Then you just relax and maintain awareness, or just develop the training that you used to have, and then settle down. And because you have experienced them and you have understood them, then when you are able to let things be, do not go and continue to like want to analyze and reason and find out, then the mind will return. Then your meditation will come back. So it's like what you have gone through, which is very good. But this one will not happen only once. It will come again, sometimes two times, sometimes three times maybe. And then only completely gone. You have to understand them. It's just like pain. When it comes, do not panic. You know, then see through pain. Understand the unreality of pain. It's just a conditioned mental state. When you grasp and cling and give meaning, where you dislike the sensation, then you label it as pain. What happens is when you label, it becomes a mental hindrance. And you will a dislike for that sensation. So when mental hindrance is there, how can you settle down? That's why they cannot meditate. Failure to understand this will lead to meditative problem. So they will try all sorts of method and technique or skillful means to try not to have the pain. So all those doing will not benefit them because it does not result in wisdom. The wisdom is to accept whatever sensation, because the reality is, like the Buddha said, if conditioned like that, things will be like that. So what is a condition? If you don't know how to relax, if the chi is not flowing smoothly, this type of sensation will develop into what they call unpleasant sensation, like pain, numbness, and all those things, sometimes itchiness or whatever. So when they arise, you do not stir your mind and react to it and create mental hindrance, and you can still accept it. This is part of the way where I'm not relaxed. That's why that type of sensation arises. But why should I label it? If I accept it, what happens? My mind is at peace. When my mind is at peace, the sati will build up. So sati will take over instead of mental hindrance. Then when sati take over, the spiritual faculty is there. That's why sometimes when it take over, there is a sudden shift of consciousness. The mind will flash with a very bright light. Then the whole sensation, like gone, disappear. Then the mind like suddenly bright, clear and free, full of virya energy, full of very stable, strong awareness. It's just aware with brightness. That is for you to understand if you go through all those phases. So to understand meditation is not so clear-cut and easy unless the cultivator has gone through all this before. Otherwise, when they reach this stage, or what they call like a stage where they encounter obstacle, most people don't know how to break free or continue with the cultivation because they don't understand. Unless you met somebody, a cultivator who has the understanding, then they will let you have the understanding and guide you how to go through it. So for your case, you are lucky because within a week or so, you're able to understand it. Sometimes for certain people, it may take them weeks, if not months. And some people can be trapped there for very long. They don't know what is going on. So this is a very important stage where the understanding will break you, prevent you from getting into the situation where doubt will arise again. Then the analysis or the thinking or the reasoning will start to come in again. What happened, what is going on, and all say. So you try to seek answer. But the understanding of meditation is whatever happened, that is the reality. So I always use this word, treat it as part of the way, part of the training. Then just be patient. Do not react, do not stir, do not have doubt. Just have faith, relax, continue to maintain awareness. Then whatever happened, let it be. Then it will settle down. But if you have even a very slight craving or desire to gain back that state of tranquility, because you will reach a point where you think, like what you described, you can meditate very well. You can enter stillness and samadhi very fast. that is the time when you have developed this ability and it stabilized the way you think you already progress very well. That is the time the test will come. And when the test come, a lot of people are not ready, most of them. But for me, I was actually lucky because my past. So initially, I also reflected, contemplated, then some form of reasoning come in. But for me, because of my past, when I relax and silent, sometimes at night, when I relax, silent and sleep, then in the dream state, the answer come. The answer come. Then I understood what that thing is. Then I knew it's a test. That's after going through a few times, then later on, I was able to advise people. 3 AS part of the way. Don't panic. Don't react. Whatever happened, that is the reality. So accept it. Then be patient. 3 AS part of the way, part of the train. The mind is like that. When condition is like that, it will be like that. But it will not be forever the same because it's dependent originating, condition arising. So sometimes due to karmic, it become like that because of what you have done to people. Sometimes it's because the spiritual training, they need to test you. If you are not tested, you cannot pass. Then you cannot develop the ability to awaken. So awakening means no more question, no more problem. Everything can be understood. Then everything settled back to normal. After you clear this phase, maybe it will come and test you, I don't know, 2 times, 3 times. I think it shouldn't be more than 3 times. At the most people is about 2 times. Unless you never learn, then that will continue. But after you understand already, you clear it already, maximum 2 times or 3 times, then no more. For me, I realized after the 2nd time, after I cleared, it doesn't come back anymore. It doesn't come back anymore. Even the 1st time after I cleared, for quite a long time, it didn't come back. Then, don't know, much later, then it happened again. But the 2nd time, I was ready. I know what this is. So I just accept. I just laugh at it. So what? Because suddenly, like, throughout the day, you're not able to maintain that mindfulness to be in that state. It's very strange. Then I realize, hey, why is this happening? Again, the thought come up, analysis. Then I just laugh at it. Because why must I be in that state? Although it's an understood fact that when you are enlightened, awakened, you will be in that state. But later on, when I understand all these things, then I just let it be, then it come back. And when it come back, I got no more problem. Until today, I got no more problem. But the understanding wisdom is most important. With wisdom, only you can liberate your mind. You don't need that mind to be always in that state of tranquility and stillness. You can use it to live life, no problem. But the understanding is the one that is connected to the 5 degrees of form and mind. That is the one that has the unit soul, monasikra, to liberate you and free you. So why must you maintain that state to be in that meditative state that ever mindful? That's why the Buddha used the word when you are under training, yes. Sekha, when you are under training, you have to develop it. After you have developed the thing, you have gone beyond training, asika, your duty is over. Technically, actually, you no need to do any more thing because you have gone beyond. So those under training and those have gone beyond training, the difference is the wisdom is already very stable, developed and connected to their nature. They are no longer deluded or doubtful. So this understanding is very important, and this understanding will surface later on. Especially after the mundane mind has collapsed. After the mundane mind has collapsed, that true nature is always there. Then all these tests and whatever cannot arise anymore, then everything becomes very clear. Then you are with that true mind, that true nature throughout the day, even awake or asleep. You are with that nature, and that nature, you know what that thing is. That's why you do not fear death anymore. You understand what death is. The separation of the consciousness from the form. But that nature with the understanding, that one never die. The eternal nature, it never die. So it will have the understanding. Okay, Pochek, sadhu to you. Huh? Very good.
Sadhu, brother Theo, precisely like what you said, you know, I just accept it as a test and move on and let it be. Yes. And then everything become clear again, you know, it's like, wow, the clouds went away, you know. So, I mean, the clouds went away and everything become clear again and everything settled down so easily. But the reason, I say, because I was busy, because I have a lot of unfinished business, you know, in the daily life.
I say it may be one of the reasons, but most of the time that thought, the mundane mind that try to analyze or reason will try to give a reason to justify what happened. It could be that you are more busy. But actually the understanding of it is most important. Whether you are busy or whatever, in the midst of whatever, then sometimes you will need time to let that sankhara settle down. It's okay, no problem.
So you will
know what is going on, then you just relax and let it. Like when I came out to work for the private sector to test my cultivation, I expected it because I know I will be very involved in the work, in the whatever design. As a private sector consultant, I need to start learning the design again. I need to be involved in meetings and interaction with contractors, with client and all those things. Then the work become like more heavy because you are in the private sector. You are not in a statutory body or a government sector. So that training was very useful to me. Well, when I was in the office working, because you accepted that job, you want to come out and test, you go through it. Then it showed it to me. It like whenever I want to read letter or memorize thing, the understanding will tell me, you want to suffer, you go and do that. You go and do the thinking, you go and do the remembering and memorizing, you know, say, because this is life. This is the job that I accept and I want to find out. I want to give it a test. That's how I did it. I forced myself to go through the file, I read, and then because I am so sensitive that I can feel, that I slow down. But luckily, by then, my experience, my understanding of the job, the engineering work was so good. I don't need to know many things. I just need the key point. So I wrote them down on a notebook or a diary. Then when I go for meeting, I need to refer, I refer. So I know need to carry in memory. Then I realize that one help. But also because I involved with too much reading and too much doing and working and interaction and all things. The first week especially, I realized after I finished my work, 5:30, my office break, then I started to relax and silent for a while. Means I want to meditate for a while before I come home or drive my car home. I realized this sankhara, I saw it, it's like a dynamo, it cannot come down. But because I have already developed the understanding and the training, I just laugh at it, silent everything, and just let it be. Then within 1 or 2 minutes, it settled down again. I saw the whole thing. Then I realized, no more problem. When I understand this, there's an understanding free me, liberate me. So it's not that my mind is not peaceful. It's because I get myself doing all this work involving consultant, private sector, or say, like you say, you are more involved with your daily thing, unfinished item and business. Sometimes you have to attend to things, like during the early days sometimes, kaya minta come and see me, and I have to help them to do things or clear things. I have to go out with them. I go. Then even like sometimes when there is a situation, you have to help out in something. There was one case I remember, middle of the night, one Kayamita. I think she fainted and collapsed in the apartment. She was staying alone. Then when she woke up, the noodle or the Maggi Mee that she made, she was supposed to eat, that whole thing spilled over her body. Then she panicked, but luckily she regained consciousness. And because she stayed alone, she contacted another Kayamita, the close friend. I remember 4 something a.m. Then that Kayamita called me, but she also knew me. Then I said, no problem. I said, don't panic. I said, you come now, we go together. Then she came and fetched me. And I went with him to the apartment. So we actually got ready to break the door to go in already, because she said she collapsed, fainted and all. But luckily she regained consciousness. Then she was able to use the key to open the main door, and she was waiting for us before we arrived. Then only he told us about. So when you have to attend to situation, to realize situation and problem, you also get yourself involved in all those things. But for me, because the understanding has transformed my nature, I didn't even panic or do anything. I treat it like normal. I said, no problem. I straight away calmed that parameter down. I said, we go now. Yeah. Then we resolve it. Straight away, we actually stay in Subang. So we sent her to Subang Medical. Then she got this insurance with the car. So we were with her. Then he went for the immediate emergency ward, then the checkup. Then after that, she was admitted, I remember. Then, okay, later on she was discharged. Then I advised her later, if you stay alone, you better have a good friend or Kayamita whom you can trust. Pass one set of key to them. Then I told Kayamita, if the Kayamita we used to know often contact us and call us, if after a few weeks or a few days you don't hear from them, you better call them out to find out whether they are okay or not. Because sometimes things can happen. So this is one of the tactful way of developing understanding. Then if you stay alone, especially if you are not around, going out station or what, let some of the Kayamita whom you have faith or trust in, let them know, at least they know. Or if you want to go somewhere or what, you let them know. Then they will be able to have the understanding so that people don't go ahead, worry for you. Actually, when you have the Dhamma, you don't worry, but it's just that they may think that something is happening to you because you don't do this type of thing very often. Most of the time you are around, then suddenly you're not around for too long. People may ask, or in order to avoid unnecessary misunderstanding or this type of situation, let people know. So wherever I go, I let my wife know. And my wife also make it a point wherever she goes, she let me know. So that we understand each other. Then my children, when they got trip or what, they will also let us know. So it's good that you have somebody. But this, I refer to if you stay alone. So for your case, no problem, Pocheng. Don't worry. That's why I use the word, sometimes it may be true. You will be able to understand all this. Because sometimes daily activity, daily duty, daily life, unfinished worry problem or what you need to resolve, you need to attend, you attend. Yeah, you also have a family. So this is normal. Very good. Thank you.
Yes, Ratio. Because only through living life, you overcome all these obstacles that you learn, you know, that the wisdom arise, you know. Yeah, the Uniso Maniskara can prompt you, you know, you know what is going on with your life, you know. How do you accept and remain at ease and at peace, you know. That's the most important, you know. Yes. So through this phase of obstacles, animals, right? Pairs of life, right? Yeah. So I learned all these things, you know. It's like, yeah, I mean, you've been sharing with us all these things, right? All this while. It's the book knowledge, you know.
This
is a real test that you have to overcome it yourself, you know, through your so-called Dharma knowledge. You turn it into wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, to come and prompt you, you know, that something is happening, you know.
Then you will know what to do. Then you will not
panic. Yes, correct.
Otherwise, you will start to panic and have doubt that the reasoning, the analysis will come in.
Yes. Actually, the part that I analyzed was like because I'm dealing with like contractor, you know.
Because it was something
that I don't deal with them all the time. So they are very different type of person, people you have to like come up with question to ask them, you know, why is this purpose for, what is that for, things like that. So it's not straightforward that they will tell you, you know,
I want to do this.
They just ask you sign and then that's it. I say, why do I need to sign the kind of thing? So there's a lot of question around, you know, because they don't give you straightforward answer, you know. You have to ask, you have to probe them, you know. That is a lot of thinking to do. It's like I'm going back to work, you know.
I'm going
back to work because I'm dealing with contractor, you know. They come to the house and do the testing, you know. Then I say, then they don't tell me what kind of test they do because this is by the government, you know.
So,
the government also, they have to tell me the purpose, you know.
That
kind of thing. But, you know, usually contractor, they just, I want a blanket order, they say it like that. But if you query them more, they think that you're a troublesome person, you know. But to me, it's for understanding, you know.
Your duty, because you know what you're assigning. Then when people query you, hey, why you go and approve this thing? Why you go and sign off? So at least you say, if you tell me what are the process that you do, for this work order, then I can sign with understanding. Then when people ask me, I have checked the contractor, they told me they are doing all this, then there is supposed to be a supervisor who supervise. So let the supervisor go and do the work and confirm whether all this has been properly done or not. If it's not properly done, you all should come back to me so that the report can be made to you and you can bring it out and get the contractor to rectify or do whatever he needs to do. Because that is the job scope.
So actually through the questioning I have for them, right, so I realized a lot of things that is not even stated or make known to the resident, you know.
The resident association and all those things. The duty of resident and all those things.
So coming back to my meditation, so all these things are flying everywhere in my head, you know.
Good.
Yeah. So that's why I say, this sankhara is very crazy, you know. So it's because of this unfinished business, you know.
Meditation is not what people think. The stages of transformation is a lot, unending. Life is unending. That's why all this understanding can never unfold if you don't really experience them while you are going through life. A lot of people have this wrong idea and concept. Oh, enlightened idea. Oh, no more. After that, no more. All the work done, right? No. Initially, it's just the initial understanding, the gleam. You have to go through the process. Then, like I explained to Song and you all, the habitual tendency, that one take a long time to root out. Even the Suchi Empress also take a while for him or her to develop understanding. And all this will come back and haunt you and test you and create doubt in the cultivator. Then the analysis, the reasoning will actually make them more astray. It will lead to all this so-called problem in meditation or cultivation. They don't know what is going on and there is nobody to explain all this. Then they will come out with the doubt. How come I thought I already okay? I thought I already clear. I thought I already have the understanding. Now this thing can happen to me again. And then the doubt again. The whole process of cultivation and transformation is not a evil thing. If you are not gone through, you cannot understand. This understanding cannot unfold. That's the reason why I always share. It's not easy. But when you understand, it's relatively easy. That is very true. But to understand how many really have the ability to understand? Hardly anybody. Very few. Very, very few. Now, most people are at different stages of cultivation. But to have the full understanding that can guide people very far is very rare. That type of being is very rare. Very good. Sadhu to you.
Sadhu, Bharatiyo. Such test is very good indeed, you know. Then you can stabilize your understanding, you know. Otherwise, you cannot stabilize your understanding, you know.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's so you cannot like say don't have tests, you know. It's good to have tests. No, test me, you know.
That's
so that you can stabilize your understanding, you know. Correct or not?
Yeah.
So this is what I find, you know, the test is really good. It helps me to stabilize my understanding and see whether I can overcome it or not through all the Dharma understanding, you know.
Yeah, this one actually is very, very mild, very lucky. Yeah, the test is not that severe. There was another Karmita last time, I remember I shared with some early days. This one, the test come from her own brother. Her own brother was much younger than her, 38 years old. So the younger brother actually was married with, you know, 2 or 3 kids. Then he was sent for assignment in Hong Kong. I think while there, he ate some seafood and other things. Then he developed some sickness and complication and admitted to hospital. Then he just died like that. Yeah. Then the wife was miserable, traumatic. The children all, so she got to take over the role as a sister to calm the mother down, to calm the sister-in-law down, to calm the niece and nephew down, and do all the things. So he attended to all the funeral, everything, because she has the Dhamma. She accepted what happened, then she calmed herself down and do all those things and clear all those things. Then later on, after she was able to settle everything, then the sister-in-law, she supported her and slowly let her understand, because she heard some of the sharing of how to help this type of people, especially their husband passed away. Then you had to tell them you had to be strong, because you are not alone. Now that your husband is not around, you have to shoulder their responsibility. Yes, your children are still around. Out of love and compassion for your children, you have to stay strong. You have to really develop the understanding. Then calm them down. Give them the help and the support. Tell them you don't worry about money. You don't worry about finance. We will support you all the way. We will see to it. We will settle you down and let you have the ability to continue. And because of what he did, he was able to actually settle everything on her own now. Then later on, she come back to KL. Then we, as Kayamita, we used to ask, where do you go for 5-6 months you were not around? She said, actually, she started to tell me later on that all these things happened. That's why she has to go back to Johor Bahru. Then she settled all these things and she came now. Oh, then I explained to her what happened. I said, this is a test where you have reached a point of understanding where only the one very close to you, close relative, can put you to test. But nobody else can actually have that closeness of relation, which she is not married. So the closest one is either the mother or the brother. So I said, he also has the karmic condition to be in that situation. That's why it happened as a test. Do you know what she told me at the first instant or not? Brother Teo, if it's so chan yan in Cantonese, you know what the meaning is or not? Chan ren.
Yes. Chan yan, yes.
So such a cruel way of testing me. I would rather not to be tested. I say it's not for you to say to be tested or not. This is condition arising, cause of phenomena. Condition like that, things we learn that it happened. For me, the first test was very severe. Actually, when I cleared, there was no problem. My mother, heart attack, entered I see. Well, at that time, nobody else can actually put me to test, really. Then my son got compound fracture. Simultaneously, that time. I was doing my meditation, everything. I was doing very well. Then I have the understanding, right? Then what can go wrong? Then I just let it be, continue to do what I have to do. Then I accepted the reality. Then suddenly when I silent, I think after the night sleep, suddenly I woke up, I have this understanding, it's a test. Cannot be otherwise, because everything I have done is correct. I follow the Dhamma, every understanding is there, and the transformation happened, and suddenly this thing happened. And what a coincidence. The moment I understand that, I just go about doing what I have to do, then everything turned around. My son got a very good specialist UH there, where my TA helped me to make the appointment. He did a very successful surgery. Then my mother entered ICU. My sister was there. She's a nurse at that time at UH. She also, within 2-3 days, turned around, and she actually got a heart attack. So that was the first time she got a heart attack. She was that time, I think, 60-something, 60 years old. I was only 35 years old, coming to 35, 1989. Then after that, the whole thing reversed. Then they were discharged. Then everything fall back to normal. That first test was beautiful. I cleared very fast. So all this can happen. So for your case, Puching, it's very mild compared to that Kahyamita. So all this can happen.
Yes, relatively mild. But then the thing is, the terrible test is before I even have Dhamma. My mother passed away. So difficult for me also, you know.
But that
is before I have the Dhamma, relative.
You become different.
Yes. But it kind of like awaken you in the sense that you know life is, I mean, you understand life is final suffering, you know, when your close one pass away.
Separation.
That one happened before I really go into the Dhamma in depth. You know what I mean?
Not easy,
you know.
Yeah.
That one torture me every time I have to contemplate. I mean, that time I won't say contemplate, it give me a lot of thinking to do, you know.
Because it's so traumatic. The first number two.
It's very traumatic.
Normal people without Dhamma, they will grieve over it. They will have affliction.
I really grieve over it, you know, because I didn't have the Dhamma then, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the bad grieving, but rather it's more like thinking through the time for me. It's more like a thing of the good times we had together. Luckily, we had good times together, you know.
You like miss her a lot.
Yes.
But the reality is she is no more.
Yes, correct.
God. So all this is your memory.
So separation with the loved one is very, very tough, very tough. But it's better to have the Dhamma.
It's very normal. The separation will occur, will happen.
Yes.
No matter how close. When the condition is such, things will happen. That's why it can happen anytime.
That's why, Brother Teo, with Dhamma, you don't need to suffer.
No need. Yeah. You will know what to do. You will do what you need to do for them.
You
will be offering under their name. You need to settle whatever, just settle. Then you really love and never. Then you actually do your part as a Philippine daughter. Because you can have gratitude towards them, then you wish them well-being and happiness, that evoke power of marriage. All the things that they have done for you, that marriage is very powerful. As parents, they love their children. So that is sincere true love, and they really sacrifice, do their duty and all those things. Then you invoke power of merits by the power of all this wholesomeness and merits that they have developed and cultivated and done for my nature. May arise the causes and conditions for them to have a good birth, to be born in a good rhyme. Then may the blessing of the Triple Gem be with them. May they develop the understanding of the Buddha Dharma so that they can too go through the wisdom, the enlightenment and all. So all these are what you can do for them. That's why for my parents, I know I only need them to be my parents for one life. Their future is already taken care of. Yeah, I know my nature is different and they will do their duty because they have this good coming. Then my pure wish for them also. That's why this life I choose my parents. And my parents are very simple people, uneducated, simple, but they are beautiful people because they do their duty very well. They sacrifice and do. And it is what they have done to my nature in the past, because they don't know who I am, what my nature is, but yet they did certain good things to me. So my pure wish is to take them across. And the fastest way is to become their children. And all the timing, everything is all fitting. Where my nature will decide. And the nature will know how to arise all these conditions. That's why this time I look back, I knew why they are my parents. And even my brothers and sisters are the same. Karmically related. Then my children, my nature know, can sense, they must have that type of affinity and parami, otherwise they cannot become my children too. So all this, as a cultivator, you will start to understand, develop and see. But your cultivation has to reach a stage of stability until it is quite stable. Especially those who go the Bodhisattva way. If you don't go the Bodhisattva way, you cannot have that understanding, not easy. That understanding can only unfold when you have gone through the cultivation of the Bodhisattva way. Okay, very good. Bojang,
sadhu. Sadhu, another thing I want to say is about the Dharma books, the Sunday Dharma books that you shared with us. I know you mentioned that for some Kayamita is a refreshing course for them. For people that are newcomers especially, and myself also have not listened to Brother Teo we listened to Brother Teo for the first time. These books are so long ago, it's like 2005, Brother Teo, 0134. So we never get a chance to listen to Brother Teo sharing. So by Brother Teo sharing it on this Zoom, is so very beneficial helpful. To us.
Yeah, very beneficial and very helpful.
Yes, very beneficial to me. So the last, I cannot remember which day was that. The Brother Teo share, right? My heart, I don't mind. I would say it this way, my heart opens up, listening to you,
Your heart. Your nature opens up. Well, there is a lot of understanding and joy.
Yes. So I see that benefits, for newcomers and for me that have not listened to this Dharma talk in the past, the heart just opened up,
Yeah. Yes. Because so it's easy to get somebody who can understand meditation to teach. This book is really good. Beginner, for people who has gone into the cultivation but don't know the actual way to do it, this book is very useful.
So the three books that Brother Teo went through is very good. It's not just this book but the other two, of course this understanding of the meditation is super good, helps you to meditate correctly and properly, understanding. So Brother Teo, thank you very much, to the Kayamitas that actually come up with the transcript as well. Sadhu to them, and the website, and everybody that actually contributed. yes. in asking relevant questions, yeah. you know, outstanding question as well, you know.
Sadu.
Sadu to them. But I just
you.
Want to say
Thank
this,
you. That yeah, very good. Today
super helpful, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, Sadu, I have so much joy. Thank you.
Ah, Ingbi, yeah, Sadu.
Sadu, welcome. To add into what Sisopo Chen has shared just now.
Ah, Sadu.
I also have some challenge.
Very good, very good. Yeah.
From like what she said, usually we can settle in the formal meditation, we can settle down the mind.
Very fast.
Within 3 minutes Then the last month also I had this difficulty to settle down.
Oh, good. This is coming to you now.
But because I almost every night I do the Bodhisattva.
Wow. That one will help you. That one will help you.
It, in a way, it prompted me that maybe I didn't do it as sincere enough. So it prompted me that one of the night it just popped up to me that I must see the last training, the last so-called vow.
Sadhu. Very good.
So the thing just flashed back to me. Maybe I'll read out this one.
Very good.
Cultivate extensively, huh? Yeah. Extensively. I have not done enough that extensively.
Sadhu.
All virtues, blessings and merits to help support this cultivation of mind,
correct.
So that they will shine forth to aid this nature of mind.
That one very important.
Difficulties and tribulations
while
walking the Bodhisattva way.
Sadhu. That part very useful.
After that, I just open out the book and recite it truly in my heart to say,
Sadhu.
Merits,
shine
forth and help this.
So, that was very beautiful, very important.
So in a way, if it's a kind of reminder to others,
this is very useful.
Some difficulties in their cultivation. Always invoke this.
This vow, this particular additional
don't do
vow.
It like just superficially just done and forget about it.
So this additional vow is very important.
Do it sincerely and really look for things, look for blessing to cultivate extensively. My own SOP extensively.
This one is very important, very powerful. Sadhu, there you bring out another point which I actually refrain from bringing out because there was no condition, but you saw it very good and you use it.
The stillness or the calmness
come back to you.
Come back to the previous
previous training level.
I'd like to share one more test is recently my daughter in Poland she also had a fall from the bicycle. Because the road is snowy,
winter.
He fractured her arms also.
Like my son went through. My son that time was very young. Compound fracture.
So when she called back Zoom to us, I was doing my chanting. Time she already over her surgery.
Everything settled down already.
He don't want to stay in the Zoom with Jim because I was chanting. Say, wait for mommy come finish chanting and I tell together one
thing. Sadhu, very good. That's very good.
I really faced with her in the Zoom and then she told us all and then she was in the hospital gown. Is it the hospital gown is so comfortable?
In Poland is like that. Western country is. very good. But this is
any extra baju, they just cut away her top wear.
They
don't want to cut away the sleeve.
Correct.
To do the surgery. Everything.
That is the fastest way, yeah.
Came home, came back her house also with the
hospital without changing her. No problem, yeah. Very good.
So she told us she got a fractured lah, what lah, then show us the x-ray photo.
Very good.
Into dua, the bone, the main bone.
Yeah. That's called compound fracture. Yeah, the whole bone patah. This is like fracture, compound fracture.
They have to put in
Very difficult to align one. They have to do the x-ray after they join back, They join back with the surgery, They have to do an x-ray again, see whether properly joined or not. My son did two x-rays.
She's now with a bionic arm with a titanium.
Yeah. They have to put in.
Friday, she took all the complete cast.
And
they showed us the photo again. What I wanted to share is the first instant that when I heard her saying she got a fractured falling down from bicycle.
So how did you take it? I believe you can take it very well, no problem.
Yeah, very well. Yeah. I just that this one
Yeah lah, that is the reality.
So
ma.
I see like okay in front of me.
Yeah.
She's not showing me during the hospital.
She's
very okay with me, and then I said, a fracture, and then can you show us the x-ray? I just say I want to see the x-ray, I want to see how severe it is.
Yeah.
But Jim already, ayo, what happened?
Panic already.
How you go to hospital?
Yeah, all these things will start because the sankara will start to move. But for us, we can accept the reality, then we can really calm down and console her and tell her, don't worry, everything will be in order. Just do what you need to do. But the most important thing is to settle them down. Don't go and like panic them further or scold them. Come you so not careful? What they call you're so careless. Never do that. Never do that.
In fact, she's the one who calm down.
Brother Chief. Well, means your doctor not there.
What you have to do, you already done it.
Happened already. Correct.
Yeah, and then she has to take her painkiller.
Definitely.
Very, very painful.
Yeah, definitely. That's what injury is all about.
You sayang your left arm lah.
Read it.
You faster. Don't worry.
Sadu. Very good. Wow, sadu.
But after all the challenge and testing to me lah.
Yeah. That's very beautiful. Very good. Sadu. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Let us rejoice. Sadhu. Then I will read to you all that additional vow that Ng Bee mentioned is on page 4 of the yellow card, the chanting book. Hope you all can see in the video. The Bodhisattva vow yellow card, page 4, item number 4. So this additional miscellaneous vow is to enhance your cultivation. That's why luckily Ng Bee pick it up, because earlier on I was reluctant or not so keen to bring all this up, because not until somebody has gone through the experience or had the condition to understand, I just let it be. So what I put here is I will read to you all the 4 additional miscellaneous vow that I have developed for you all. The first one is of course very straightforward. This nature of my vow to be successful in fulfilling all my above vow soon as possible, so that one you all should be able to do it. Then the second one is this nature of my vow to cultivate strong affinity with all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and to request their nature's blessing, protection and guidance always. This one also very important. You want to go the full way, the Bodhisattva way, and progress very far, you must make this vow. Then the third one, this nature of my vow to strengthen my 5 spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya until they become balas or power, life after life, so that all my above vow can be fully fulfilled with ease. So this one, a lot of people lacking. You all must do this third one, additional vow. Build a spiritual faculty, you must strengthen it. And then the last one that Ng Bee mentioned is this. You listen, eh? This nature of my vow to cultivate extensively all virtues, blessings, merits to help support my cultivation so that they will shine forth to aid this nature of mine when needed in time of trial, difficulties and tribulation while walking the Buddhist way. So this trial can include all the tests and all those things. Then difficulties is when you confront the First Noble Truth reality. There are many situations that can be very traumatic. And tribulation is when you find it very difficult to help people because living beings are innumerable. Then you can go through all this because you have extensively cultivated all virtues, blessings and merits to help support your cultivation. So that these merits, blessings and what they call blessings and virtues can actually, you can let it shine forth through invoking power of merits and vow. Then when you invoke power of merits, by the power of whatever wholesomeness that you have done, maybe whatever merits, virtue or wholesomeness, you invoke the power of merits for causes and conditions for all this to be resolved amicably and the understanding to arise for you to overcome them and to move forward. So this is why this yellow card is very important. The additional miscellaneous vow is on top of the additional vow to break karmic obstruction, to bring about the way. So number three is additional vow to break all karmic obstruction to bring about the way. Number four is miscellaneous vow to enhance your cultivation. So these two you combine, it become very complete. Then section two, it's about the four basic vow. And section one is to develop all the right view, to prepare you to go this way, to plant the seed of Bohi, the Bohi mind. That's why I do not take this for granted. This one is a very unique teaching, sharing. It's from my nature, and this is what my Maitreya want me to bring to this civilization, this understanding of the cultivation of the Bodhisattva way. This is a very unique way. This one can speed up the cultivation by very, very fast. It can lead to the completion of the training in a very fast manner. So with this, let us rejoice one more time when we end everything. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Sadhu.
Sadhu.